You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Thanks again for joining me this week. We have a great show for you. But before we even get going, and we can ask you to go to thewoundedblue.org. That's www.thewoundedblue.org. That is the website for the organization that is the National Association for Injured and Disabled Police Officers. It is a support organization for these men and women who have given so much in the line of duty. We desperately need your help to raise money to get this movement going. And if you are a GoFundMe-er, go to GoFundMe, look up The Wounded Blue, and you can give there as well. But check it out, please, and also check out our film, The Wounded Blue, on Amazon.com. We're going to do something a little different here on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. While we are in the interview room, we're going to change up here a little bit. I got a really interesting guest. He, of course, is a former law enforcement officer. And his name is Ray Dietrich. And Ray and I have had a few great conversations because Ray is also a purveyor of the truth about the American law enforcement officer. And he has a tremendous podcast that he was kind enough to put me on, a video podcast on his show. And we hit it off so well that I wanted to share some of the repartee, if you will, that Ray and I had with you, my listeners. So, Ray Dietrich, let me give you a little... Well, actually, you know what? Let's let Ray talk about Ray. First of all, I'll tell you this, that he's got the Thin Blue Line show, and he's got 17 years in law enforcement. I'll let him tell you. Go ahead. Ray, welcome to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Well, thanks, Randy. I'm going to just stick with purveyor of truth. I think that works out pretty well.
I like that.
Yeah, that's a great title. I'm gonna steal that. So, you know, 17 years, I did 5-6 years in L.A. County Sheriff, you know, patrol and the jail, all that good stuff in South Central. That was a good time. And then I moved out to Riverside County Sheriff, where I worked, you know, patrol investigations, street teams, and as a sergeant in custody and patrol. So got to do some things and stuff. And luckily, you know, I kind of found my way out of the job due to business outside of it kind of blew up. So here I am. And now I'd like to tell people that I can actually say what I want to say, and it's kind of an interesting place to be.
Isn't it kind of liberating? You can actually say everything you want to say and know that the other coppers that are listening to this and the people that support law enforcement are appreciating hearing the unvarnished truth.
100%. And that's really what I found. You know, I started with just a little fan page on Facebook and putting out memes and stuff, you know, and then I just realized once I got clear of working for the government, right? Being able to say from a street police perspective and being the voice of those on the line, I mean, that's an awesome place to be, and to be able to be their voice on things that they cannot share or their opinions, because you know how they're locked down so much by their departments and in social media and everything else. So it's nice to be here to share perspective from those who can't, I guess. Exactly. Is how I got it.
Exactly. So to the listeners that are out there right now, before we even get started with where we're going to go with this show today, I'm going to read something to you guys, and I'm really happy that Ray's on board here to listen to something that a veteran police officer has sent us to read. And I'm going to give you a little bit of background about him. His name is Kirk Lawless, and Kirk is a 28-year decorated police officer from the St. Louis area, and he was off the job now after 28 years due to an up-close and personal fatal gunfight in 2009. And as he says in his little bio, he occasionally puts pencil to paper, and feel free to friend him on Facebook or Google search him to to find out a little bit more about him, Kirk Lawless. And I know Kirk. I've known him for several years. He has written other things that I have found really powerful. And this, too, is very powerful. I'm going to read this to you, and then Ray and I are going to talk about all of the topics that come up as a result of this piece. It's called I Am That Cop. Fast approaching is Police Memorial Week 2019. This year, the names of 153 police officers taken from us in 2018 will be added to the Law Enforcement Memorial Wall. Not added to this wall are the names of 163 police officers that died by suicide in 2018. To date, and it can change daily, the numbers of police officers taken from us in 2019 is 30, and the suicides of law enforcement officers is 56. I have had the misfortune of being muzzled for nearly 10 years due to legal action that has now run its course. I have endured the lies. The muzzle is off now, as are the gloves, and I will no longer be quiet. What people fail to realize about the police culture in the United States is that I am every name on that wall, and I am every name on the other list as well. That is the culture of policing. I cut my teeth on when I came on the job, and I sadly see it is time for a change. The spirit of brotherhood I used to see on the job seems to be waning. Statistics don't lie. The job is toxic. It is a dangerous profession, and we know that as a fact. Some will argue that there are more dangerous professions to the point of it becoming monotonous. But of those professions, how many include daily interactions with people who simply want to hurt or kill you because of what you are and what you represent? Where I come from, if you spit on my brother or sister, you have also spat upon me. I am that cop. When one of us is killed, it causes something inside us to die. La petite mort, a little death, and that's the way it should be. I am that cop. The death of a police officer by suicide is no different. At least it shouldn't be. I am that cop. Those officers with PTSD are still our brothers and sisters. They are supposed to be. It's 2019, folks, and asking for help should not end a career. Politicians and cold-hearted brass need to be educated. They need to help fix us, not abandon us, and not lie to us. Cops on the job don't want to call bullshit on what goes on because it can impact their career negatively. Well, I don't work for anybody anymore. I fear no man, so I will say it. The system needs to be held accountable. I am that cop. I know the seemingly eternal sorrow of abandonment. I know how it feels to be ostracized, and am familiar with the sting of inaccurate and vicious labeling. I know how it feels to be held incommunicado, to be a prisoner in your own mind, prisoner in your own home, to cry for help, to call for backup, only to hear the crackling static on the police radio. No response. No wailing sirens coming from a distance announcing, "Brother, we're coming for you." I will tell you this, it is one of the worst feelings in the world to be alone. I am that cop. If you have ever delivered a death notification, telling a parent they have lost a child, or a child they have lost a parent, or any such scenario that usually ends with gut-wrenching cries of anguish, and felt your own heart break, I am that cop. If you have ever stood over a brother or sister officer who has been shot, stabbed, mangled, or killed and felt part of yourself die, I am that cop. If you have ever visited the scene where a brother or sister officer died, if you have seen their blood, lots of blood, spilled on the ground and watched while the firefighters hosed what was left of your friend down a storm drain, I am that cop. If you have seen every conceivable act of violence and cruelty perpetuated by one human being by another, or have seen the vertiginous, retching horror of the most grisly death scenes, whether by accident or a crime committed on purpose, I am that cop. If you have witnessed the death grimace of the faces of countless victims, the open eyes clouded by death, the ones who haunt you and left you wondering what their final moments of life were like, I am that cop. If you have seen the suicides of people who chose to opt out of life and wonder why they did such a thing in that final moment of desperation, I am that cop. I see every flag-draped coffin. I hear every playing of taps. I see every grieving widow, widower, child, parent, brother, sister, aunt, uncle, cousin, grandparent, or friend. I hear every lone bagpiper playing the fields of the forest. I see every wet-eyed police officer standing graveside. I see every grizzled, hardened, disgusted on the brink of losing all faith in humanity police officer. I am that cop. I hear every curse spat at every cop, every threat of violence. I feel every punch, every gunshot wound, every stab wound, every kick in the nuts. I have seen, stood in, smelled every crime scene, the blood, the vomit, the piss, the shit, the death, the filth, the decay. I have held the hands of the dead or dying. I have held the crying, hurt, sick, abused, battered, dead, or dying babies. I am just like you. I am that cop. I am with you. I am standing beside you, shoulder to shoulder. I will never abandon you. I will do what I can to help you. I will do my best to save you, even at my own peril, including my own death. I will share what I have with you, whatever that might be. I will never run away. I will never give up my gun. I will never quit fighting. I will always guard your back, even if no one is watching mine. I will never put you in harm's way. I will shield you. I will defend you. I will avenge you. I will tell my boss or politician that attacks you without cause where they can go, including inviting them outside for a cup of coffee to work it out. I am old school, a dinosaur not yet extinct, but perhaps on the brink. I am that cop. If I have 10 and you have 0 and need it when we part company, you'll have at least 5. If I have an extra 100 and I know you need it, you don't even have to ask. I am that cop. If you have ever pulled the trigger and put an end to a deadly threat, I am that cop. If you need someone who will ask the all-important question, are you okay? I am that cop. If you call for help, know this. I'm coming for you. I'm on my way no matter what the circumstances. No questions asked. If we go down, we go down together, fighting. If you need someone to go through that door, I'm with you. No hesitation. I am that cop. There are many like us, but there needs to be so many more. Will you be that cop? All I can say is, holy shit. That is a hell of a piece of writing.
I put that right up with Paul Harvey's police officer. Like, that was incredible.
That was incredible. Kirk Lawless, I know that you listened to this program. And I thank you for not only writing that, but for having the guts to share it and for giving me the privilege to read it for you. That's something that's, I mean, you know, Ray, having been a cop as long as you have, seeing the things that you have seen, how does that, I mean, I got a lot of emotions going on inside me. How about you?
No, absolutely. It caught me on the heartstrings numerous times. That's one of the most accurate, you know, letters, pieces of content, whatever you want to call it, about the job that I've heard. The reason why I mentioned Paul Harvey's is because that's the closest I could think of, and that was done a long, long time ago. This is, it kind of just covers all. Like when people ask, you know, and there was a point in there where, you know, other people compare our job to other jobs as not being as dangerous. And I think he really nailed in that letter, I mean, it's the fact that it's all the things that you're running into people. I always explain to people, like, here's what being a cop is. It is worrying that every single person that you come in contact with or make eye contact with during the shift is going to kill you, and encountering at least 4 to 5 people a day who are having the worst day of their life, right? Like, that's what a cop is. And that, and he really was able to put that out there. That was outstanding.
Yeah, he nailed it. He nailed it. I've seen some of his other pieces, and you know, I'm not gonna talk too much more about him, because I think he's gonna be, I think he's working actually on a book about his life and his experiences, and it's really he's been there, man. Let me put it that way. You know, that's the voice of someone who has been there is unmistakable.
Yeah, you can always tell.
And you know, that's the beautiful thing about doing a show like this, about Blue Lives Radio, and I know doing your show, that helping to get that voice out there to our brothers and sisters who are still serving, who have served, mm-hmm. and also to all those tremendous men and women who support law enforcement and have been, you know, almost denigrated for that support. You know, we truly need to come together as a nation, as a country, for some values that really matter. And I think that law enforcement is one of those values that can bring us together as opposed to tearing us apart.
Yeah, I mean, somewhere in the last 10 years, we became the bad guy much more than we were in the previous 10 years. So I'm not sure what happened, but that needs to be addressed. And the big thing about that stood out in this letter, and I'll move off of it too, is it took him 28 years to write it because officers aren't allowed to have these kinds of opinions, right? Like, if they come out and say these things while they're working, they're going to get in trouble a lot of times. Maybe not this one specifically, but that's where the responsibility for us and even the community supporting officers has to step up and fill that gap, you know, and get this kind of message out there. So, you know, I'm super grateful that this show is here and you're putting the message out, and officers like this who, once they get free of their jobs, they can get the message out.
Let's talk about, there's an issue that he brought up in this thing that I think we really need to go in depth on. And that is that when officers ask for help, he alluded to it in that piece about the administrations and cities often turning their backs on these men and women, and instead of giving them the support and the help that they need to pick up the pieces, they become, in essence, the enemy. I mean, there's a story that was on Blue Lives Matter. The last couple of days, about a police chief who fired or who took the guns away and suspended 3 police officers, all who had been in traumatic incidents, saying that their PTSD was cause for taking their jobs away.
A PTSD was cause for that.
Yeah, that was, yeah, PTSD, right.
Wow, that was created serving their community, doing that job exactly. So that makes a lot of sense. That's the problem right there. Cops feel like they're fighting against their administration. They're feeling like they're fighting against sometimes their community. They have everyone gunning after them. And for a chief to come in and do that, that is so unacceptable. And that's why I like to see that you're trying to make this a federal issue and some kind of law to protect these officers. Something has to be done. You should not be able to go and ask for help. And a lot of these guys could be on the brink of suicide, let's face it. And you're putting them in a situation where if you ask for help already, now the admin's going to take your gun and turn you away and get you off the street. That's the worst thing you can do to a cop, period. At any time. So they're just not going to come forward for that. It's just wrong.
And this is what we're seeing all over the country. We're seeing police officers who can be fixed. You know, let's talk about post-traumatic. Let's talk about this term for a second. Post-traumatic stress disorder. That is what we know it as. That is the phrase or the term if you will, that we are all familiar with, post-traumatic stress disorder. The name, the paradigm needs to be changed. Post-traumatic stress disorder is a condition. Post-traumatic stress injury is just that. It's an injury. And that means it can be fixed. It can be cured. It doesn't have to become post-traumatic stress disorder. But if we don't allow those who are suffering from the symptoms of post-traumatic stress injury, if we don't allow them to freely come to their agencies for help and say, hey, look, I'm having a problem, and instead of getting help, they get fired, where is the humanity here, Ray?
It's just crazy. You're asking these cops to go out and risk their life literally every single moment they're out there. And when it's their turn for a little bit of help, they don't get it. It's crazy. And the stigma they attach to it. This is something that doesn't mean they're weak, right? Or an issue or a problem. They just need help. And it's the most basic thing that these administrations just have to be educated on. And if they can't take it on their own, then they have to be legislated into it. It's getting crazy. And it's getting worse and worse and worse. I've seen it, you know, amplify over the last 10 years.
The Wounded Blue is the organization that is being launched during Police Week. Wounded Blue is the assistance and support organization for injured and disabled law enforcement officers. And this is something I've been working on for over 2 years, and now, well, we were already up and going, but we have done hundreds of peer supports. We have an amazing team of men and women, all who are like Kirk, all Wounded Blue. They've all been shot, stabbed, beaten, screwed over, screwed up, and they know how to talk to those who have experienced the same thing. This is the future of compassionate law enforcement, in my mind. But we have to do much more. We have to, as you know, you and I are out of the game now, so to speak. We're no longer serving on the streets, but you and I are still serving. You believe in this mission as much as I do, and that's why you do the things that you do. Where do you see yourself as far as helping the American law enforcement officer? How do you view yourself as taking a role in that now that you have ended your career in law enforcement, but pushed forward into a much more entrepreneurial realm?
The good news is I was a closet nerd for a long time. So I got really good at like the internet and computers and all that good stuff. So luckily now I have a platform. You know, I can put out videos and content and get, you know, 1 million views, 2 million views, get a lot of eyeballs on things. So for me, I see this as a major opportunity to spread the word that it's okay to have these issues and to address them. I've lost a lot of people to suicide related to PTSD. It's a horribly tragic situation, and it gets worse and worse and worse. That's no secret that there's a huge link to suicides in police officers. So for me, that part hits extremely hard. The way that officers are treated by their departments is, you know, that hits me personally extremely hard. So my whole goal and my role in all of this is to, you know, push my platforms and get these kind of messaging out as much as possible, and partner with you know, foundations like you have with the Wounded Blue, with direct missions to fix some of these problems, to address it. Not just awareness. Like, awareness is amazing, but like, what can we actually do now that people are getting aware? What's the steps to prevent some of these suicides or these officers getting screwed by their departments? What can we do? And, you know, if I can affect some change because I nerded out and I can get a couple million people to look at something, that's what I'm going to do.
Well, you know what? I'm looking forward to working with you in a lot of different ways, and you know, I think together we're gonna make a difference in the lives of many of these men and women. So let's talk about some of the stuff that's going on here in law enforcement and why some of these instances that are coming up, especially in the media, are having such a negative effect on the morale and the well-being. I mean, we're talking about the well-being of law enforcement officers. There was just a news flash, if you will, that came out, and it's concerning one of the watershed moments in law enforcement that happened under the Obama administration, and that was the death of Eric Garner in New York City. So Eric Garner, for those who are listening that are not all that familiar with this situation, Eric Garner was a very, very large man, something like 6'6 or 6'7, pretty close to 400 pounds. And he was selling what they called loosies, loose cigarettes, in New York City. The shop owners were making complaints because he was bothering their customers. And the NYPD had a special squad that was investigating these type of incidents. They, several of the officers approached him. They were just going to give him a ticket. And instead, this Eric Garner basically fought against them, would not be taken into custody. One of the officers, who was very small in stature, tried to bring him down to the ground by wrapping his arms around his upper chest area and neck area. They went down to the ground. Garner, because of his obesity and a heart condition, he had asthma, died as a result of this fight. And it went insane. The accusations of racism, the chokehold. This was the mantra of the anti-law enforcement movement, that this white cop put a chokehold on this poor, innocent man who was doing nothing, and he murdered him. Well, you know, it just raised all kinds of hell. The Department of Justice investigated, the homicide investigated, the district attorneys investigated, and they determined that the officer did nothing wrong. Well, just now this is years later, Ray. This is years later. It just came out that, quote, the chief surgeon for NYPD said there was no injury to Eric Garner's throat or trachea to confirm a chokehold. In other words, there was no chokehold. What's the only thing that you have heard about this case, Ray?
I can't breathe. How about that? That's the narrative that's been pushed for 4.5 years on this case. 100%. The white cop choked to death this poor black man because he was just selling cigarettes on the counter or on the corner. Like that's how it was sold to us for over 4 years. And I'm sitting here looking at it myself. The medical examiner is saying it's obesity, hypertension, diabetes, and asthma. Not really a chokehold from a beat down from the police like it's getting put out there. But that was, and I'll go there a little bit, you know, that was the narrative that changed somewhat during the Obama administration. I don't know what occurred or what happened, or you have the same thing that happened in Missouri, you know, false narratives that drove the communities to go against us even more. It's crazy. And he did a seatbelt. I'm a jiu-jitsu guy. That's a maneuver for control. You know, it's an underhook on the left, hand over the shoulder, and it's not a full choke. It's a control hold more than anything. The guy was way bigger than the officer, so it doesn't surprise me. And I'm going to go ahead and say I won't be surprised if this isn't a top story everywhere, that they don't go back and instead of, you know, making an update news story that people are actually going to see, it's going to be in the back page, if at all, you know, 30 pages deep into the newspaper, on the back page of their website, whatever, because this isn't a narrative that sells clicks.
Well, you're absolutely right, but let's look at all the other pieces and parts here. First of all, NYPD, the New York City Police Department, has taken the officer who was unfortunate enough to be called on this incident, and basically vilified him for years, took him off the street, took him out of circulation, punished him, and it is still going on today. They haven't even allowed this officer to go back to work in any meaningful capacity. So what is the message here to all of the NYPD? In fact, all police officers everywhere. What's the message that they are sending to our police right now?
Oh, the message is that we're going to sacrifice you for the public's happiness on false news, pretty much. Like, that's my take on it.
That's it. You got it.
And it's been going on and on, and especially in the larger departments who have more media attention. You see it more. And they'll just throw you to the wolves. They don't care if you've had 15 years of tremendous service, that you've been injured for the job, you've done this and that. If something happens and the media and the public decide it's something that it's not, that's how they're going to roll a lot of times. I hate it. It's disgusting.
And you know, they already paid the city of New York paid $5.9 million to Eric Garner's family. $5.9 million. This incenses me. The reason that Eric Garner is dead isn't because of the police. The reason that Eric Garner is dead is because of Eric Garner. And because of his decisions. His life's decisions and his decision on that particular day to simply not take the stupid ticket.
Yeah, comply and get the ticket. You know, sign here, 3 copies. Boom. Done. And you're out. Instead, he's dead. It's crazy.
Look at the divide that this type of incident causes in America. The media, of course, is the, you know, I got the media is the bad guy here. Okay. All right. Social media is bad enough, but the media itself has taken an incident like this, and of course this was on the heels of the Michael Brown debacle in Ferguson.
Ugh, that's another one.
So exactly. So they were hungry for more. You know, it's like a beast you can't satisfy. They're fed by the Obama administration. They were also, you know, given fodder by the Eric Holder Department of Justice, who did everything that they could to weaponize against police. They couldn't find that this guy did anything wrong. And this investigation is still not completed from the Department of Justice, which surprises me a little bit, because I would figure that under this present Department of Justice, they'd have closed this case out. But no. And so, you know, with all of this taking place, we're seeing a little bit, I think, of a difference in the present presidential administration as far as the media goes. A little bit of a curtailing. And certainly the Trump White House and Department of Justice is incredibly supportive of law enforcement. But the media, who is, of course, continues the fight all the time against Trump, continues the fight against police as well.
The media, you know, their constant assault has just gotten worse and worse. I've seen a change. I want to say I've seen a little bit of a change since Trump came around. I mean, the Injustice Department's changed quite a bit, right? So there is that. Going back to like that time when the Obama administration was in, and we have like the Ferguson shooting, right, with Michael Brown. We won't get into it in detail, but basically you have a good shooting that was flipped to something so different that the city was burned down and it became a national crisis almost, and fueled the attacks in Dallas on those cops. Like all of these things, you know, Eric Garner, Michael Brown, all these incidents that were played out with false narratives. It's, if we can get to the point where they're not jumping to the conclusion, then supporting the media narrative to support that conclusion, and we can get information out faster that's more accurate, I think we're getting somewhere. I think that's the only way to begin to fix this, is departments doing a better job. And I think, although I was like so against body cams when they started.
I'm like you, man. I began my police career in the 70s. I'm dating myself. I get it. I understand it. And there were calls at the time for dash cams. And I was so against dash cams. We used to call it the punk in the trunk. And we would just, you know, we didn't want it. There were departments that did it even back in the early 80s. And then when the incidents with Michael Brown and some of the other, you know, the propaganda started against law enforcement in a major way, and the media and the politicians and the social activists were screaming for body-worn cameras because they needed to protect those the people from the police. Well, how'd that work out for them, Ray?
The body cams are going to show a lot of – I mean, they show what happens, right? Here's the problem I had, and I've warmed up to them because they've turned out good. But here's where I have a real issue with body cams is departments – that try to hold standards of ridiculousness to officers with their actions on body cam. And what I mean is like profanity. What I mean is like those types of things, which sounds like, oh yeah, you should not swear as a police officer. That sounds great until you're detaining five, you know, armed robbery suspects by yourself and they're moving around and acting shady and you're going to drop some F-bombs. And that's how you stay alive.
Now some of the same people that were screaming to force the police to wear body cams, you know, people like, oh yeah, the ACLU and some of those other individual groups that were so anti-law enforcement. Now, there are these same groups are saying, wait a minute, let's revisit this. Maybe we shouldn't allow police to have their body cams on during civil unrest. And now they're actually going against their own motivations, if you will, and telling the police that they don't want them to wear body cameras because, well, golly may, it's shown that the cops are doing the right thing, that the vast majority of these body cameras are showing the cops acting responsibly, that the uses of force are justified. And now that's changing the narrative. And you don't hear anything from politicians now demanding that body cams come on. When was the last time you heard the demand for body cams for cops?
Yeah, you're not hearing it. You're just not hearing it anymore. It's not the thing anymore. Nope. It's, you know, the body cams, they turned out working good. You know what I mean? It's just, I just want to see these administrations, like, let them be cops. That's it. You know, I try to explain it to people, like, you think cops are rough and tough and they, you see these uses of force and they seem so violent and this and that, but you know, it's them in the moment of danger. It's not a regular job. It's the most dangerous encounters and situations you can be brought into. And you can't judge what happens against regular contacts with people. Like they're on patrols that could end their life at any moment. And they're heated and things are different. And I think departments are doing a better job, but like still it's being held at standards of common citizens, like being polite and, hey sir, please put your hands up. You know, it just does not, they're not two things. Like there's the reality of the streets and how it really is and the rules that the bad guys play and the cops play. And then there's what the public wants it to be, that it's a nice, pretty place that nobody gets hurt.
You're talking about the snowflake mentality. I want to go back to something you just brought up. And that's about the misuse of the body cameras by police agencies, administrations. You know, yes. First of all, if you want to screw somebody, you want to take one of your employees and you want to, and you got a personal agenda against them.
Oh, Randy, that never happens. Come on.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Silly me. You know, there are so many police agencies where you, if you ask the coppers, what are you more afraid of? The police or the police administration or the people that you're dealing with, 95% of the time you're going to hear, I'm more scared of my own administration than I am of the people. And part of this issue is that if you choose to target someone, you're the chief of police, you don't like Officer A for whatever reason it is. He used to date your wife. Who the hell knows? If you want to look at every minute of his body camera, you're probably going to find a policy violation somewhere in the mix there. And so I object to, as you alluded to it earlier, I object to using this type of technology for these personal vendettas, and we know that it's taking place.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, let's face it, you can't go an hour on the street in a patrol car without violating some policy. It's just the way it is. It's like saying that you're not going to violate a traffic code in your personal car on an hour drive. It's going to happen, right? And if you got somebody gunning for you and they're using this body cam, it's just crazy. Like the level of scrutiny that these guys are taking and getting screwed by their departments over it. It's nuts. But it's better than I thought. Like I was completely against them in the beginning. I was like, do not put that on me. I don't want it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and now, you know, it's funny. It's interesting the way technology works. As I said, when I first became a police officer and they were starting to outfit patrol cars with the dash cams, people were they would do anything to find a patrol car without a dash cam. Now, most of the officers, they want a car with a dash cam or a body cam, because they know that it's a protection for them. And in addition, you know, there's, you know, been an ancillary benefit to this. And that is the training aspect.
Yes.
One of the things that really, really bothers me as a nation, expect so much from our police officers. And we should. But we are not giving them the advantages that they deserve in terms of proper training, proper administration, proper supervision. But let's talk about training almost exclusively for just a moment, because you got 50 different states with 50 different regulatory bodies that determine what police training they should get. Then you've got 18,000 different police agencies in the country. 80% have less than 20 cops. And they have their own policies. They have their own training regimens. And in many of these, a cop is lucky to get 5 or 6 hours of training every year after they get out of the academy. And then, if they screw up, what do we do to them? We indict them.
Send them to more training.
Oh, no. They're lucky to go to more training. What's happening is they're not getting the training. Look at this young officer in East Pittsburgh. This guy, this poor kid, it's his first day on the job. He's making like 10 bucks an hour. Here's a report of an attempted murder. Sees the suspect vehicle with three occupants. They're all armed. They've already shot one individual. He makes a car stop on him. He has no backup. One of the suspects takes off running. He thinks he sees a gun in his hand. One thing is for sure, the guy didn't comply, the 17-year-old, and in fact had gunshot residue on his hands and a magazine in his pocket and a stolen gun in the car. He shoots the suspect. They try him for murder.
Ugh.
Murder. Well, luckily, the jury lasted about 3 hours and said he didn't commit murder. This was justified. But look at what he had basic training. And they don't give them the tools that they need. And then at the moment that something goes awry, they throw them to the wolves like yesterday's mashed potatoes. That's what I found offensive.
Well, yeah, you are no longer useful the moment you cause problems for a lot of departments, period. And it doesn't matter, like, your agency, the DA, all of them will throw you to the wolves and destroy you if the public is going against you in many departments. I've seen other departments stand up to people, but that's what happens with lack of training, young officers. There should be, you know, it's the old thing where you cannot judge a kid with a year or two on the streets the same as you can with somebody 15, 20, even 10 years, almost 5 years on the streets. It's a different thing. And training is everything. There has to be that portion of your brain that understands that it's a scary job, scary things happen. And if you're brand new and don't have the training that you need, that's not being provided to you, it's not your fault.
And there was such a public outcry with this one. They, the East Pittsburgh Police Department now, as a result of this, no longer exists. They shut the entire police department down.
But, I mean, that's not knee-jerk or anything.
Oh, no, of course not. Of course not. And the mayor of Pittsburgh, who didn't have anything to do with any of this debacle, came out after this officer was found not guilty, and is now trying to take a page from the California idiots and change the law so that even if the shooting is justified, they can still try the guy for murder.
Oh, great! That's logical. That's perfect.
And this, unfortunately, this is not an isolated case anymore. This is what's taking place across America.
So let me ask you this. Why would you become a cop today?
Oh, you know, it's funny you should ask. You know, because this is what we're seeing now. We're seeing people just not applying for the job.
Yep.
We're seeing a huge decline in recruitment and a huge decline in retention. Guys are just saying, you know what, screw this. Why would I do this for $50,000 a year?
Right.
You know, here's the thing, Ray. Do you remember when all of this nonsense started under the Obama administration? And Black Lives Matter became a, quote, movement, mm-hmm. unquote. And their stated objective was to basically disband police agencies, was to destroy the criminal justice system as we know it in America. That was their stated objective. And here's the real frightening part of this, Ray. I think they have achieved their goal in many, many places.
They've had huge effects and policy shifts and all of these things that have big effects of who's doing this job, period. You know, like you know as well as I do, any cop who's been around enough time, all the cops sit around and just count down the days of their retirement. Like, they're like, okay, I got 3 years and 22 days, and then I have 241 days till I'm gone, right? Like that, it shouldn't be that way. It is, but it shouldn't be that way. It's people forced into wanting to get out so bad, and I think now you're seeing people that see what's happening on the media, and they see how officers are being treated in these cases, and they see that the backlash the wrong way against law enforcement, and exactly, like, why would I want to go do this job? However, I do have faith. I do. There's that section of cops out there, whether it's 50% or 75% or whatever it is, that are cops because they want to be cops. They're not there for the money. They're not there because, you know, in the recession they had to switch jobs because their income went down. They're not there for the retirement. They're there because they want to be a cop. You know what I mean? And I came in, I'm a fourth generation guy. I came in, I applied when I was 20 and a half, the first day that I could. You know what I mean? Like, because I wanted to be a cop. I still think there's a chunk of people out there that have that in them, and that's what I'm banking on. Because, I mean, those cops are still out there today, so as long as those cops still keep coming in the door, I think we'll be okay.
I like your thinking. I agree with you in part, because law enforcement job is a calling. It's not simply a job. And still to this day, I can think of no more noble a career than to be an American law enforcement officer.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, we're kind of getting low on time. Where can my listeners see your podcast?
Easy to find me. Just head over to thinbluelineshow.com, and you can find all my podcasts and my pages and all the good stuff.
And you can even find a show with me on it.
Absolutely. You are the last episode currently on there, but you can you can check on there, see an interview. We sat down and had a good chat, and we're going to be doing that again as well. So that'll be much more often.
Absolutely. So I want to really thank you for taking the time to be on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, giving us your insight, sharing with us your thoughts about the current situation involving law enforcement. And I think we just might have to do this again.
I enjoyed it, and I appreciate you having me on, and thanks for doing everything you're doing, Randy. Much appreciated.
My pleasure. I want to tell you guys about a pretty amazing product. It's called Arrest My Vest Spray. And really what it's designed to do is when you are wearing a ballistic vest, you know, it gets sweaty, it gets hot, it gets drenched, from working out in the street. And sometimes it doesn't smell all that well. And this is an amazing product that takes that odor away. And you don't even have to use it just for the vest. It takes pet odors away. It's great for your vest. It's great for your dog bed. Everything else that you need a deodorizer for. This stuff is amazing. Check it out. It's at stinkyvest.com. Go to stinkyvest.com and check out Arrest My Vest Spray and arrest the odors. I want to tell you about a company called Law Enforcement Specialists. If you are an active duty law enforcement officer and you're looking to work extra jobs like security and traffic jobs, these are the people you need to go through. We all know that working extra jobs is what gives us the extras. Gives us that little extra payment that we need, or perhaps gives us the opportunity to take our families out to dinner a little more often. And the only way to do it is to be working extra jobs. So what they do is they're all over America. I think they're in everything but a couple of states. And they work with your organization, your administration, and find off-duty jobs to work. You gotta check them out. Go to offdutypoliceofficers.com. That's offdutypoliceofficers.com and register with them, contact them. Now, if you have security needs, this is the company you want to go through as well. If you are looking for both security or traffic jobs, if you have a company that requires that, you want to contact these folks as well. They're good people. They're based in Arizona, but they have police officers and services all over the country. Go to offdutypoliceofficers.com.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
End of Watch with Randy Sutton.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay our respects to the men and women of the profession who have made the ultimate sacrifice, given their lives in the line of duty. Unfortunately, this week I have three names to read. The first is Detective Benjamin Campbell of the Maine State Police. Detective Ben Campbell was struck and killed by a vehicle tire while assisting at the scene of a disabled vehicle on I-95 south of Colebrook Road in Hamden at 7:30 a.m. He came across a vehicle that had slid off the interstate due to inclement weather and stopped to provide assistance. As he was standing outside of his department vehicle, two wheels of a passing logging truck separated from the vehicle. One of those wheels struck Detective Campbell. He was transported to Eastern Maine Medical Center in Bangor, where he succumbed to his injuries. Detective Campbell had served with the Maine State Police for 9 years, was assigned to the polygraph unit. He survived by his wife and six-month-old son. Detective Benjamin Campbell, Maine State Police. End of watch, Wednesday, April 3rd, 2019. The second officer to die in the line of duty this week is Deputy Sheriff 2, Spencer Allen Englet, of the Forsyth County Sheriff's Office in Georgia. Deputy Sheriff Spencer Englet suffered a traumatic medical event while participating in a training exercise at the Basic Police Officer Training Program at the Georgia Public Safety Training Center in Jasper, Georgia. He collapsed during the exercise and was immediately attended to by training staff and medical personnel. He was transported to a local hospital, where he passed away a short time later. Deputy Englet had served with the Forsyth County Sheriff's Office for 2 years, had previously served with the Baldwin County Sheriff's Office and the Oconee County Sheriff's Office for 6 years. He is survived by his wife. Deputy Sheriff 2, Spencer Allen Englet, Forsyth County Sheriff's Office, Georgia. End of watch, Thursday, April 4th, 2019. The third law enforcement officer to die in the line of duty this week, Sergeant Stephen L. Lycon of the California Highway Patrol. Sergeant Steve Lycon was struck and killed by a vehicle while conducting a traffic stop on I-15 between Lake Street and Nichols Road in Lake Elsinore at 4:30 p.m. He had stopped the vehicle on the right shoulder and was in the process of taking enforcement action when a reckless driver drove onto the shoulder at a high rate of speed. The driver struck Sergeant Lycon, pinning him and his motorcycle against the car he had stopped. Sergeant Lycon was transported to a local hospital where he succumbed to his injuries. He had served with the Highway Patrol for 27 years. He survived by his wife, daughter, and stepdaughter. Sergeant Stephen L. Lycon, California Highway Patrol, end of watch, Saturday, April 6, 2019. May they rest in peace. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I hope that you enjoyed the little difference in our format today and my special guest who participated in this program, former officer Ray Dietrich. I think we might just have to do this again. So I would love for you to join me on Facebook. Go to Facebook, the voice of American law enforcement. Follow me on Twitter at LT Randy Sutton. And as always, go to www.thewoundedblue.org and show your support for the American law enforcement officers who are injured and disabled in the line of duty. We'll see you again next week, right here on America Out Loud.